Welcome to Always Hold On to Smallville. In this podcast, we talk about each and every episode of the Young Superman TV series that ran from 2001 to 2011 on the WB and the CW. This week, we're talking about Obscura, the 20th episode of Smallville's first season. We're getting near the end, guys, getting near the end of season one. And I'm happy to be joined by my friend, Daniel Prue. What's up, Daniel?
Hey, Zach. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Now, Daniel and I are both contributors to Trek FM, the biggest and best, dare I say, Star Trek podcasting network on the internet.
Oh, I think you should dare to say that. Otherwise, Chris, our overlord, would be very unhappy with you. So
that's true. whenever I appear on Trek FM, I post the podcast on our Twitter and Facebook, and we're doing a project over there called From There to Here. And it's the 2016 is the 50th anniversary of Star Trek, so they're going through, we're going through each and every episode of Star Trek two per day. That's insane, right?
So much Star Trek. I mean, I can't think of another, I'm sure there are, but I can't think of another franchise that has that level of content. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Over 729, I believe the number is. I had to memorize it for a while.
Yeah, yeah.
anyway, yeah, Dan and I talked on some From There to Here episodes, and you know, it turns out he's a big Smallville fan. So, of course, I invited him to be on the show. So, Dan, tell us a little bit about your history with Smallville. When did you first start watching it? What phase of life were you in? And how long have you been a fan? Stuff like that.
Oh, boy. I was in the highly influence-able... I can't even... What is the word? Influential. There we go. The age of... What was the year? 2002? So I was 16 at the time when this started, 16, 15. I was right in the middle of high school, you know. I've always been a massive Superman fan, like huge. He's by far my favorite superhero. I will defend him to the death, which, you know, it seems that you have to kind of do that these days.
Unfortunately so, yeah.
especially with the recent films and stuff, you know. Wherever you fall on that spectrum. So when I heard that this was coming out, like, I actually remember this. It's kind of funny. I remember when the pilot showed up and I was just watching TV with my mom and I'm like, oh, you know, I heard that they were doing this young Superman thing and we just actually happened to catch it. This is like, I know maybe some of the younger listeners probably don't know how this happens, but back in the day when you were just flipping through channels, as they called it, that's what we were doing, you know, and we just happened to come upon the pilot right before it started. There was some commercial or something. And then right after that, you know, I was good to go. I was on board for a good 6 or 7 years. And then I fell off the train and then decided a few years later, I can't leave that unwatched and rewatched the entire series. So.
So when you rewatched it, did you start again at the beginning or did you finish off?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, no. Started right from the beginning. It was good. It was good to have the beginning, the end. You know, I just mentioned that Star Trek has a lot of content. 10 years of Smallville, that's a lot. There's a lot there. There's a lot to chew on for sure. And I wish, I'm sure you've talked about this before, it was easier to find and digest this content. It's so difficult and, you know, whatever.
Yeah, there are ways on the internet to watch it. that is a downfall of Smallville right now. It's not a very accessible show, unfortunately. Yeah. Now, it has been announced, and I say this in almost every episode because this does come up in almost every episode. Hulu has announced that Smallville will be on Hulu soon, at some point. Like, it's the contracts have been made. We're just waiting on it to show up. So as soon as it is, you'll hear about it from us because that will expand, you know, Smallville's audience, then hopefully our audience as well. Because, you know, I understand that a lot of people are like, oh, it's Smallville. Yeah, that show that was on forever with Superman on the WB. That's their extent of their knowledge. But I feel like, you know, with the superhero renaissance we have, the golden age of superhero television, as I refer to it as, I think a lot of people would be drawn to Smallville, especially like we're in at the time of this recording, we're in the summer break right now, all the CW shows and all that, there's nothing on TV. So this is a great thing. It could fill the void for people who become fans of, you know, The Flash or Supergirl and stuff like that. But there's nowhere to go. They can't go watch it unless they go buy the DVDs. And, you know, no one's going to go buy a whole... Well, I don't know. DVDs are actually pretty cheap now, but mention it. But no one's going to go buy, like, the complete Smallville Blu-ray set if you have no experience in the show. You know, if people just want to test it out and it's accessible to them, I'm sure they would check it out. But so we'll keep you posted, Dan. I'll put you on the list of the first to know when it comes out on Hulu. But I had a similar story with you when I've said this on the podcast before. But I was flipping through channels with my dad, and it was the second episode of Smallville Metamorphosis that we came across, and I didn't even know this was a show. I didn't even know it was coming out. It's ironic now. I was completely oblivious to it, and now I'm doing a podcast about this series. But there's a show, and I'm like, hey, that guy's bald. That's interesting. And that guy looks like Superman. And they just said the word small. Is this a Superman show? And it was. So the whole series, right? You watched the whole thing. What did you think? Like, at the end of the day, was Smallville successful? Or, like, did it tell the story it set out to do? Like, what's your take on it? Is it a pass or fail at the end of the day?
Oh, well, for me, it's a pass. It really is. But it's a pass with a lot of valleys, right?
A lot of asterisks.
Yeah, with a lot of asterisks. Yeah, it is what it is. It's a product of the CW. It's a product of the time it was made in. It's I do think it's successful in a lot of ways. I mean, I think its portrayal of both Lex Luthor and Lois are the best versions that we've ever gotten. Absolutely the best. Hands down. There's nothing for me that even comes close. So, and I love of course Tom Welling. He's amazing. So. I love this show, but I love it in a flawed kind of, I want to help make you better kind of way, you know?
Yeah.
Because when the thing is, when the show is good and when it's firing on all cylinders, it's amazing. But then, then other times we have to deal with other episodes and it's tough. It was very uneven from start to finish. But the way it transformed from season one to season 10 is actually a thing to behold to me. Especially, going back, I haven't watched these first season episodes in a long time, and going back and watching them and then comparing them to the later seasons, it's so amazing how much the show transformed from basically a high school drama to the precursor, essentially, to this wide universe that we now see with The Flash and Arrow and Supergirl coming on. It's amazing. Like, Smallville, we would not have this amazing CW, DC television stuff without Smallville. There's no doubt about that. And it paved the way for all that stuff. And later on in the season, you can tell later on in the series, they just went for it, you know? And they just had fun. And I did. I kind of appreciate that stuff more now, you know?
Yeah, Smallville, it really was a test of concept almost for all the DC shows that we have. Because... every character who has its own show now appeared on Smallville almost. Like Arrow, The Flash, Supergirl. These are all characters who at the time people were like, oh man, wouldn't it be cool to have a Green Arrow spinoff from Smallville? Or wouldn't it be cool to have a Supergirl spinoff from Smallville? These are all conversations we were having back in the day. And here we are. I mean, so of course, Smallville is a self-contained thing. There's been a lot of talk about, or there was a lot of talk, like, oh man, maybe Tom Welling could come back and play Superman. Look, that's not going to happen. It's officially not going to happen now. But, I mean, that's not going to happen. Smallville needs to be its own thing.
I don't know. That does disappoint me. I mean, I wouldn't want them to try to shoehorn Smallville continuity into that universe because it wouldn't fit.
Right.
But, I mean, I think the audience is smart enough to separate it. And I think he did such a good job that it would be really cool to see him in the suit. I don't know.
But does he think it's really cool to see him in the suit is the real question.
Well, no, obviously he doesn't, but yeah. It's too bad.
If he were going to be Supergirl, Superman, you would obviously just ignore the fact that he was small. He would just be another version of Superman, and that's not unheard of. It could be done, but it's not in the cards, and so Smallville is its self-contained thing, and I would have loved to actually see Tom Welling in a Superman costume. I think it would be awesome, but... That was not in the cards either. So there you have it. I agree with your assessment about pass or fail. It's a flawed pass. I mean, I love this show. I would not be talking about it on a weekly basis in depth the way I do if I didn't love this show. Now I call a spade when I see it, and then sometimes I feel like I'm a little too nitpicky, a little too critical. But just because I love it, like you said, I want to make it better because I know how good it can be. Like you said, because it can be an amazing show when it hits on all cylinders. Usually. When it centers around Lex. Lex is to me the strongest point of the whole series. And yeah, I would definitely agree with you that Rosenbaum is the best Lex Luthor. There's really no comparison. Now, no. Erica Durance as Lois Lane, season 8 and onward, I would agree with you.
Oh, no way. No way. For me, Lois works from the first episode that she shows up in. And every time I rewatch the series, I'm disappointed that she kind of disappears for quite a bit after she shows up. You know, she does the whole thing where she's there for a little bit and then she leaves and comes back. Again, she is the strongest part of that show for me. And
Lois Lane is the strongest part of Smallville for you.
Lois and Lex.
Interesting. Absolutely. Interesting.
Yeah. Well, and the parents, I'll say, and the Kents. Yeah.
No, I do think like I said, around season 8, when they treated Lois and Clark properly, I felt like, okay, this is Lois here. But the problem was Lois was redundant for so long because Chloe was Lois for all intents and purposes on the show.
Right.
And then they bring in Lois and I'm like, well, Chloe's already doing that. We can't have two of them. But that's the thing with all these CW shows and, you know, tracing it back to Smallville, they like having two of every character so they can do whatever they want, right? Like Lionel was basically another Lex, you know? And then you look at Arrow now, you had two Black Canaries, right? You had two... Yeah. Two Deathstrokes, right? On the Flash, you have two Reverse Flash. You have two of all these characters, so they can do multiple things with them. And it's like they want to have their cake and eat it too, and that's how they do it, by having multiple versions. And that's what they did a lot of stuff with Lois and Chloe, where it's like, look, I love Chloe. I'm a Clark shipper. I'm glad that Chloe got to live happily ever after. But if you were going to bring Lois in when you did, it would have been almost better to truly kill Chloe off at the season 3 finale, as they had hinted. You know, and then there's no redundancy there. There's no overlap. And that would have been a great loss to the series. And this is me. Yeah. I'm a Clark shipper here. I'm an Allison Mack fan. It would have been a great loss to the series. But in order for the character of Lois to flourish properly, maybe they should have done that. You know, because like you said, she goes away, I believe, for the first 3 or 4 years that Lois was on the show, she was only like a part-time star. Like, she was only in 13 episodes a season contractually. I don't know if that was a thing from, like, the movie department that said, you can't have Lois Lane on your show too much. I'm not sure where that came from, but that's why I didn't care for Lois in the first several years she was on the show, because they could not progress her character. They had to stall her and keep her in that area. You know, they couldn't push her towards the future that Chloe already had. You know what I mean? So that's kind of my stance on Lois.
I can see what you're saying, and I kind of don't disagree with you, but Chloe is so essential. She's so fundamental to Smallville to me that I just, you know, It would be wrong to sacrifice her for the sake of Lois and Clark, especially, of course, that we get to see they live happily ever after anyways, so it's fine.
Well, and also, they brought in Lois in season 4. They probably thought the show was going to end in season, you know, 5, right?
Yeah.
But they're like, oh, we have 6 more years? Oh, boy.
We're not even halfway yet? Oh, okay, all right. We should do something then.
Now, the greatest what-if in Smallville is if Clark had not turned back time in the 100th episode and Lana had died instead of Jonathan, that would have been preferable and made Lana like his Gwen Stacy. I would have preferred that because Lana gets really insufferable, especially season 6, season 7. And then when she comes back in season 8, which is arguably the worst stretch.
Season 2.
Oh, yeah. Now, I will say, rewatching the first season, I was a Clark and Lana fan. I mean, you're supposed to root for Clark and Lana, right, in the first season. And I do, because, you know, she's the girl next door, and he's, been in love with her for years, and he's finally getting a chance to talk to her. And Lana's a good character, I'd say, the majority of season 1. But here is where we start to get, like, Lana turns into the Lana we know and don't love further in this series. She's kind of passive-aggressive about Clark's relationship with Chloe. Anyway, we see the seeds of the Lana that we don't like moving forward. But anyway, so that's a little bit of background between you and I on Smallville. Yeah. It's always interesting to get, you know, some more other passionate fans have their other points of view. So I think we have a better understanding now of where each other are coming from in our Smallville discussion. And this episode, knowing that, this episode in particular should be interesting to talk about.
Sure,
so,
totally.
So yeah. Let's get into it.
I keep wishing Chloe would just walk up those steps. Never appreciated how much she meant to me till now. Thought of never seeing her again.
Clark, you can't think that way.
You know, I remember the first time I met her. It was 8th grade. She'd just transferred from Metropolis, and I was assigned to show her around. The first thing she wanted to know was where she could buy a copy of the planet so she could keep in touch with civilization. When she found out I lived on a farm, she insisted I invite her over to experience it firsthand. I think she thought I was Amish. When I brought her up here, just kissed me right out of the blue.
Why'd she do that?
She said, I know you've been thinking about that all day, so I figured we'd get it out of the way and be friends. It was my first kiss.
Obscura is the 20th episode of Smallville's first season and aired on May 14th, 2002. It was written by Greg Walker with a teleplay by Mark Verheiden and Michael Green and directed by Terrence O'Hara. So Obscura starts out, we get some nice helicopter shots of Whitney and Lana riding horses, huh? This is a thing I always forget about. Oh yeah, Lana's into horses.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What'd you think of this opening of the episode, Dan?
You know, it starts and it's two of my not favoritest characters, so I'm kind of not on, you know, not super excited right off the bat. But you know, you give it time.
Yeah, that really isn't the fastest way to best way to draw in. Oh, what are these two teenagers on the horseback going to talk about? Not a very compelling draw you in opening. But then they see that a gas main is about to explode, and so they go over there, and there's like a sheriff and a firefighter or something, and I'm not familiar with why gas mains explode or how they work. If I did, I might have more to say about this particular situation, but they're working on one, but there's another one right next to it that starts shaking, and Lana, of course, decides to stand right next to it. like, why would you do that? Because Whitney goes over to the other guys, and is like, hey, that one's going to blow, Lana, get out of the way, and everyone starts running, but since she's so close to it, by the time it blows up, she gets, like, projected, you know, a long way, and gets caught up in the explosion, and this is actually a shot that they use in the... for many years to come in the opening credits of Smallville. Yeah, so this I'm very familiar with this special effect. They got their money's worth out of it, but this was a good explosion, though. I will say Smallville does building explosions and stuff like that pretty well, large-scale explosions. They make sure they get some pretty good coverage on it, so you see the same thing blow up about five or six times from different angles, some good sound effects. But more importantly, in this explosion, we see kryptonite is all over the place because it's Smallville. And kryptonite's everywhere. So,
this is season one, right? So these are officially meteor rocks.
Oh yeah, these are meteor rocks. That's correct. Right. I guess you know no one outside of Clark and Clark's inner circle ever calls it kryptonite because you know Superman doesn't become a public figure. So for years and years, people call them meteor rocks. Did that bother you, meteor rocks, the terminology?
No, it never actually. I thought it was cute at first. I wouldn't say it ever bothered me. And then once they realized what it was and they started calling it kryptonite, that was fine. It makes sense because if, you know, if this incident happened in the middle of Kansas, you know, that's kind of what you would call them, I guess, unless somebody scientifically came up with that name or something.
Right. Some people seem to like they get annoyed by the meteor rocks. I'm like, eh, whatever. It's a Smallville thing. You know, it's very Smallville.
Yeah.
I don't mind it. But then we already have another tally for our series tally board, a hospital visit. That's plus one. So we'll tally that up at the end of the episode and see where we stand so far. It's funny. I don't know if this kind of... I feel like this episode was a little bit meta as well because Whitney has a comment. He says, I kind of hoped I'd see my last hospital room in a while. because, yeah. I mean, he's talking about he had been in the hospital a lot with his father and stuff like that. So that's what he's referencing. But I feel like the show is referencing, yeah, we're in the hospital all the time. I would like to think that the writers were a little self-aware there. And then Clark and Chloe stop by to check on Lana, and she's out. I don't know, she's not like in a coma or anything. She's just out of it. She's passed out, knocked out. Chloe's on her way to go to her internship interview in Metropolis at the Daily Planet, and she mentions she's going to crash at her cousin's dorm.
Right? Oh yeah.
So is this your friend Lois Lane's dorm?
Absolutely. This excites me. This is the kind of like I remember getting excited about this. Like. It's gotta be Lois, right? So it was exciting at the time, I remember.
Does it make it better or worse that Lois and Chloe are related? You know? I mean, like, they're like what journalism runs in the family. Like, what do you think about that? Do you think that's universe shrinking to have them be cousins, though?
No, not at all. I don't because, well, no, I really don't. I don't think it is because Chloe becomes such an important part. I mean, I guess maybe it does become universe shrinking. I don't know. I'm kind of torn on it now that you're asking me that question. It does in a way, in the fact that, he ultimately meets Lois, and Lois is obviously the one he's going to be with. But it does add an interesting twist to the wrinkle of the Lois and Clark story. I guess, generally speaking, as far as, like, the story goes, yeah, I guess I would be more... It makes more sense to me that Clark goes to the big city, and then he meets this reporter, and then they fall in love, and that's cool. But as far as Smallville's concerned, I really like that they tie... his roots to Lois in some way, in some meaningful way.
Well, once you understand that, and this took me several years to come to this, you know, contentness, but you understand that, you know what, this is not a prequel anymore to Superman. This is the Superman story just taking place at an earlier stage in his life. You know, that's what you have to view Smallville as. Otherwise, you're going to be like, he's fighting Doomsday? This is ridiculous. Of course, that was kind of ridiculous, but, you know, that's how you got to look at it. And yeah, I agree with you. I have one foot in one camp, one foot in the other when it comes to Chloe and Lois being cousins. It's an obvious way to insert her into the story. And anyway, this is the first reference to Chloe's quote cousin, and we get another reference down the road again before we actually see Lois. So while Chloe's leaving, Lana wakes up from her Lana has a nightmare of or a nightmare a vision of like a weird point of view, like weird video effect shot. I'm not really sure what Final Cut Pro filter they put on the footage, but it's some weird distort filter, and we see like someone stalking Chloe in the parking lot and basically abducting her, and then Lana wakes up from this vision and says, Chloe, and we cut to the opening credits, and that's a nice hook, I guess, to keep you interested. So we come back from the opening credits, and we're at the Kent house, and the Kents are, you know, Pa Kent is working on like the sink or whatever, and Martha starts asking Clark about the spring formal. When he's going to ask Chloe, and Jonathan's like, stay out of it, Martha. And it's always funny to see the Kent family dynamic, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I love it. To me, that I love their, you know, back at the farm, it's good stuff. I always love their dynamic and their family relationships and stuff, you know.
Now, Martha does drop some truth on Clark, though, because Clark says, well, you know, I would ask Chloe, but then if Lana sees me with somebody else, that's like saying the door is closed, and Martha's like, the door is closed, Clark. It's like, wow, Martha. Martha speaking some truth. I like it. Yeah, I don't see when I thought, because I'm, you know, as we established on the podcast and in our conversation here, I'm a Clark fan. I'm a Clark Chloe shipper, you know. And I always kind of retrospectively look back at the end of season one. It's like, yeah, this is when Clark and Chloe got together. This was the Clark Chloe episode. This is great. But you look at these episodes actually, and it's not really that way. It's kind of like Clark, like still liking Lana a lot and not knowing how to move forward with Chloe, and it's just like, oh, it's not as A to B as I had remembered and kind of hoped it was, you know.
This is Clark not having a date to the dance and asking Chloe because he knows she's free.
Yeah, not the best look for Clark, but you know, that's kind of how you have to read it at that point, right?
Yeah.
Did you ever have a spring formal? What is a spring formal? Because I have, you know, I've been to prom. Right? But what is a spring formal? Like underclassmen prom? What is this, right?
You are asking the wrong person. I had a very unique schooling experience, so I don't have a typical one. But no, I'm not sure. I have no idea. I assume it's some sort of a dance where you wear frilly dresses and tuxedos and then, you know, maybe have two beers and pass out. I don't know. I that's what I kind of assume from this episode and the next.
Yeah, in the school gym, no less, right?
Right.
So Lex stops by.
Of course, he just shows up. Yeah, hey, just
that happens a lot on Smallville. Mm-hmm. Characters just appear. Now, I gotta say, this is the beginning of a continuity just avalanche in this episode of like season one continuity. I was very, very impressed actually of how many callbacks we got, because Lex stops by to reimburse the Kents for the chemical spill that happened on their farm back in Zero. The Luther Corp chemicals are spilt on the farm by the villain of the week that week to get Lex in trouble. So Lex has come back to reimburse them. You know, Jonathan has always been very suspicious of Lex, but looks like he's actually going to take the money here. And he, you know, gives Lex a handshake, the handshake that was denied to him in the pilot. So it seems like, you know, we're making some progress with Kent, with Jonathan and Lex. And, you know, whenever it feels like it's always two steps forward, one step back with them. And that's going to happen later on in this episode, too. So,
you know, there has been much to do about in the future, of course, about the Lex and Jonathan relationship. What if, you know, Lex is always just looking for approval, essentially, right? He wants a real father figure. And at the end of this episode, what if Jonathan just took the money? I mean, it's like, it was frustrating to me. It was like, you deserve the money. He's not like giving you the money out of charity. You know, he's giving you the money out of necessity, out of, you know, but it's just like, what if, like, I was watching this episode and I don't actually do this often, but when I rewatch this episode, I'm like, Jonathan is so stubborn that he is pushing Lex to like resent him. Like at this point, you know, it's interesting to see it in that lens.
Yeah, when you really look back at the story of Smallville, it's like, man, you know, Jonathan, if you guys would have been a little more trusting, a little more accepting of Lex Luthor, because he was trying, at this stage of the series, Lex is trying to be a good guy. He's trying to not be his father, you know? But he's consistently, like, has the door slammed in his face. So, of course, you would just flip back to the other side after a certain point. I feel like that should have been more, you know, the spoilers, right? Getting to the big picture of Smallville. I feel like they should have played that angle up more and less like the Clark-Lana-Lex triangle, which I was never a fan of. And it's just creepy because, like, they're kids. They're in high school. I mean, I know they're 15, 16, but still, they're high schoolers, and he is a young 20-something. And I get 5 years later, they're all a little older, but the fact that they're all still around each other that age, it just doesn't sit well with me. Anyway, moving on. Speaking of high school, Clark is in the Torch office. Chloe is out of, well, everybody thinks Chloe's out of town. We know that she's been abducted, but everybody thinks Chloe's in Metropolis at her Daily Planet interview. And Clark is, my notes here, I said, Clark is struggling like a sitcom dad, isn't he? Like in the Torch, he can't get the printer to work. Like
it is. It's messing up. It's funny. And it's great to see, you know, it's so funny to, it's such a dated show in some ways, and it's charming to me, like, to see, like, these old IMAX sitting on the desk, and he's like, I don't know what's going on, and they're printing out these things, and it's just cutesy and fun, and I really actually enjoyed that scene a lot, that he's literally the entire thing falls apart without Chloe in 5 minutes. It's awesome.
Well, perhaps if Chloe had more than a staff of one, things could be more automated, because, you know, and I've mentioned this before, Chloe, Pete and Clark, I guess, the entire staff. And does Clark even, like, do stuff on the Torch? He's always hanging around. And Pete, same for Pete. Like, they're always around, but I don't see them going and reporting on things. The Freak of the Week from the last episode, Justin, played by Adam Brody, he was the cartoonist for the Torch, so at least we know we have that. And then way back in the second episode, they did mention that Bug Boy used to write for the Torch, so... that's like, I'm trying to keep like a roll call here of anyone who has ever worked on this apparently daily high school newspaper, right? Which is just completely ridiculous. Right?
Yeah. And like high school newspaper that has access to all of the most, you know, essential things happening in town. It's really funny. It's funny.
So Lana stops by, to talk to Clark about the intense dream that she had about Chloe. No one's heard from Chloe, but no one's really concerned about it because it's only been a day and she's busy. So they really pay it no mind. You know, they kind of shrug it off and go about their business.
These were the days before Facebook.
Yeah, it's like, well, she hasn't checked in on Facebook in a while. And yeah, it's a totally different world before social media, let me tell you.
Yeah.
So then we cut to the Luther Mansion, and Roger Nixon is back. Roger Nixon, we haven't seen him in a few weeks. He is Lex's reporter that he has... on-call reporter, and this is the continued continuity avalanche, as I'll call it here. Roger Nixon is upset because he's seen the article that the other reporter, Carrie Castle, wrote about Lex back in Drone, which was for the Metropolis Journal, a much more reputable newspaper. So I like how Roger Nixon kind of has his ego bruised here because Lex had somebody else write an article about him. So much continuity going on. I didn't expect a callback to that. I had forgotten that. I thought that was just a one-off side plot they never mentioned again. So I like the continuity there. And, he comes to Lex with something other than the meteors falling and the meteor shower. So Lex is intrigued because, you know, Lex, he's a curious guy. He wants to get to the secret of the... Lex is always obsessed with mystery. So that's basically what this is. And he gives him this flyer to, like, a guy that does, like, biplane rides or something. So they're going to follow that up. You know, Clark continues to be sitcom dad here on the farm where he's trying to start the tractor. And it doesn't work.
Lots of problems with the tractors in Smallville, that's for sure.
One episode he throws one, like, into the sun by accident.
That was the flare one.
The one with Perry White.
Yep. Oh, that's a great episode.
That is a great episode. Well, maybe that was the same tractor. Maybe they finally got a new tractor after that. You know, because Clark's having trouble with the tractor, and he's a little upset because he hasn't heard from Chloe. He's starting to worry about her. He actually, you know, acts out and beats the tractor, and, like, there's a huge dent in it now. Jonathan's like, whoa, hold on there, son. The tractor's been on our family for generations or something. Like, it's like, really? It's a tractor, man.
But
Clark says, well, with the money from Lex, maybe we can buy a new one. And Jonathan's like, well, I hadn't quite decided if I'm going to, you know, do that or not. And, you know, and to our point earlier about Lex being pushed to the dark side by Jonathan, Clark says, Lex isn't perfect, Dad, I know that, but slamming the door in his face over and over only helps turn him into exactly what you think he already is. So that's the show basically narrating the subtext of what's going on.
And also, this again, this arrangement is not about Lex trying to redeem himself. This is actually just a reasonable compensation for lost equipment and property. And so I just, like, I don't understand. Like, Jonathan has this, and I get it. You know, Jonathan is supposed to be so pure of heart and so wonderful that he kind of has this premonition and he knows where Lex is going to be terrible and evil and awful. And that's fine. But, like, this episode and these kinds of situations make me frustrated because I'm like, no. It's not unreasonable to take this money when he ruined your stuff.
Yeah.
Like, that is a totally okay thing to do. And being on your, like, moral high horse in this situation doesn't serve any purpose other than to frustrate all of the other characters and yourself because you have financial troubles, you know. So I just – it irritates me a little bit, but I understand what the writers were going for.
Yeah, if I'm starting to understand why the Cancer are always in such financial difficulty. If literally Jonathan is owed money, he refuses to take it.
Yeah. He goes to every bank and he's like, you know, I know you stole some candy bar from the grocery store down the street. I can't take this. I cannot take this loan from you, so I'm sorry. You know, he's just like, he's so over the top, and it's like it's good to be moral and things like that. But at some point, it's like, you're owed this thing. You can take this thing and be, you know, guilty free from it.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I've heard it argued from other fans that Martha is actually more like the moral center of Smallville than Jonathan. Because Jonathan, he has a temper. He has his, like, ridiculous, like, standards, you know.
Yeah.
So Martha is the little more the level-headed one of the family.
Oh, yes,
for sure.
Yes. Martha would have taken that money in an instant.
Oh, yeah. So then we cut to the Talon, and Pete is bragging to Clark that he has a date with Erin Fox, the hottest girl in our class. Of course, a character we've never met before and never see. I mean, I guess we see her. I guess that's the girl that Pete takes the spring formal in the next episode.
Oh, yeah.
But it's just funny to see he's all like, yeah. You know what I did, Clark? I asked her. So he's trying to, you know, goad Clark into asking Chloe.
I was going to say, this scene is also important to remind us that Pete is a part of the show still.
Yes.
Because this is, I think, the only scene he's in the whole episode.
Yeah, maybe so. You know, Pete and Whitney are both underutilized characters, certainly. But then, you know, when you take a step back and look at the grand scheme of Smallville, I actually think Whitney turned out to be the better character because he at least had an arc. He had progression. He had a heroic end. Spoilers.
Mm-hmm.
But even though he was there for a short amount of time, they did a lot more with him. With Pete, he was there a little bit longer, but they eventually wrote him off because they just didn't know what to do with him, and he came back, and it was, like, awkward, and anyway, it's Pete and Whitney, man. This maybe, you know, Smallville, you know, Next Generation, that's our jam, you know? I feel like, right, Smallville Season 1, it's kind of like the Next Generation Season 1 problem. There's too many characters, you know?
Yeah.
You got Pete, you got Whitney, you try to mix these people in, you got Lionel popping up in a lot of episodes, you have supporting characters, so a lot of people to juggle. You got the Kents, you have, you know, Aunt Nell, who just appears on occasion, but you have all these characters who logically should be in the story, but you can't really service them very well. So it's like, you know, Next Generation, you have what's Worf doing when Tasha's the security chief, right? He's walking around in the pack. I love that the interview, I think it was in the TNG Blu-ray Season 1 with Patrick Stewart, and he's like, yes, you think back on Michael, and you know, you always think, oh, Commander Worf, and then you realize, like, oh, well, Denise was there in the first season. So you think, what was he doing that whole time? It's so true.
Yeah.
At least in Star Trek, you have the bridge, so all the characters can be there. So even when they don't do anything, like, oh, there's Geordi sitting next to Data. Okay, he's in this episode. Check him off. In Smallville, like, there's not, like, a central location all the characters would be. So you have to engineer these random scenes that feel so out of place to just work everybody into an episode. So,
yeah.
Like, as you said, that's Pete's, you know, appearance, and then check that off the list. And then Clark and Lana have another, like, awkward conversation about the spring formal. Like, Lana's selling spring formal tickets at the Talon, and Clark's like, oh, spring formal tickets. That's a good idea. And Lana's like, have you asked anyone yet? And Clark's like, I have my eye on someone. I'm like, okay, what? Like, Lana, aren't you still dating Whitney? What is going on here? Like, this is an inappropriate conversation to be having, I feel.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because even though they're not saying it, like, with their words, like, you totally get the vibes from them here. And he's like, what did she say? Something like, oh, well, hurry up. You better hurry up and ask. No one likes to wait till the last minute, not even Chloe. And then Clark's like, what makes you think I'm going to ask Chloe? I'm like, oh, that just hurts my Clark fan heart right there. Because it's like, oh, man, Clark, come on. But then Chloe has another premonition or vision or whatever of Chloe, and it's she's tied up in a somewhere, like in a warehouse or something. So we get that, and then we actually cut to Chloe in this situation. She tries to escape and gets knocked out by her abductor, who knocks her out with like some like a green liquid in a syringe in any other episode of Smallville, that would be code for kryptonite, right?
Right.
But it's not. It's just, like, can we not change up the color? Like, you know how important green is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of like, you know, in the Superman movies, the Christopher Reeve movies, that the crystal that Jor-El gives, you know, him that builds the Fortress of Solitude and he talks to Jor-El on.
Yeah.
I don't understand why they made it green. Like,
yeah. Like,
they could have made it blue, red, yellow, you know, the anything, primary colors of Superman. There are plenty of other colors. Right? But kryptonite in the Superman universe is code word for green. And we see this again later, too, when Chloe's actually in the coffin. Like, you see, like, there's lights in the coffin as well. I think they're just glow sticks, but they're green. And you think, oh, no, there's kryptonite in there. It's going to affect Clark. No, it doesn't even play in at all. So I don't know if that's the set decorator or what, but change it up. Change up the color. But so have you read the New 52 at all, DC Comics? I don't know how big into that you are.
No, I'm not actually a big actual comic reader.
Are you familiar with the Court of Owls at all?
In passing, I wouldn't say I know too much about them, but yeah.
They were a villain, you know, organization created by Scott Snyder for Batman in the New 52, which is one of the really great actual stories of the New 52. If you ever want to read a Batman graphic novel or pick some up, I would recommend the Court of Owls for Batman as a recent, is, you know, everybody says The Dark Knight Returns, Year One, that kind of stuff. And those are all great. But if you want something recent, The Court of Owls is pretty good. Anyway, I say that in saying that the costume of the abductor here, of Chloe's abductor, looks just like a Talon from The Court of Owls. Yeah, he's got the red eyes and everything. So I actually thought that was pretty pretty interesting touch. And obviously, I did not pick up on back in 2002 because that story had not come out yet. So so Chloe's dad shows up at the Talon with the cops because Lana's had another vision and wants to tell the cops. And you know, we didn't talk about these cops. These are the same cops from the gas main explosion earlier. And there's two of them. There's Vertigo and Watts. So it's like Vertigo, what a cool name, right?
Right.
And then Watts. Now, Watts is played by an actor called Darren Klemick. And he has not really been in that many things. He was apparently... I didn't know this, Dan, but they rebooted Flipper as a TV show. Like, I know they did the movie, right?
Okay.
But he played a character in Flipper, the TV show. So there's that. He was in a couple of episodes of Andromeda, Dead Like Me. Kind of a short list as far as he goes. Now, the other one, Vertigo, Aaron Douglas. Now, if you're a genre fan at all, you know who this guy is. He's the Chief.
Oh, yeah.
From Battlestar Galactica. Yeah, the Chief. Mm-hmm. He's also been in, like, the X-Files. He's been in The Flash. And the recent season of The Flash, he was the turtle on The Flash. So any genre fan is going to say, oh, yeah, that's the Chief. So it's cool to see him. And he actually has another appearance in Smallville down the road as another character. So anyway, those are our two law enforcement officers we're dealing with.
Yeah, I was so excited to see him. Right. And obviously, you know, as a Toronto production, we see a lot of these character actors over and over again. But the Chief, so good. He was one of my favorite characters in Battlestar, which is one of my favorite shows ever. So
you know, we cut back to Lex's plot, and him and Roger have gone to investigate the crop duster who has reported, you know, something else coming down with the meteors. And it's this beat up old, you know, place. It really sets the tone well. This guy is down on his luck. He has his, like, broken down plane in front of his shack, basically. Lex actually asks him, like, how much did you used to get paid back in the day for a crop dusting run? He's like, $600. So Lex pays him the $600 to hear his story. And the guy basically says he saw a spaceship crash the day of the meteor shower. It changed course when it landed. And then he went back to go look for it because he was out flying around dusting crops and the meteor shower happened. And then he went back to go look later and it was gone. So that's his story. And Lex says, that's a good story. But he seems rather skeptical and doesn't believe him.
Well, publicly anyways, right? We find out later that he does an investigation which actually bears fruit, pretty important for Smallville.
Huge mythological fruit there. So later that night, Lana comes to visit Clark in his loft. He's pretty upset now about Chloe being missing, but their search party's out and stuff like that. Why he's not out there using his X-ray vision is beyond me, but because they found her car in the woods, so they know officially now that Chloe's missing. And, you know, I really like the story. Clark tells a story about the day he and Chloe first met, because it's been established that Chloe's not from Smallville. You know, she's from, you know, Metropolis. And apparently she moved here, he says, eighth grade. I don't think they realized that was last year. He acts like it was so long ago. He's like, yeah, it was back in eighth grade. You're in ninth grade, man.
Well, you know, eighth grade for Tom Welling was probably 20 years before this, so... It does seem reasonable that that would be a while ago.
That's true. So Clark tells the story of how, you know, Chloe was new at school and he was, you know, they signed him to show her around. And when she found out, you know, he lived at a barn, she thought he was Amish. So that was cute, and insisted she come check it out. So they went up to the loft and she kissed him. And she said, "I know that we both been thinking about that all day, so we just get it out of the way, and now we can be friends." Mm-hmm. And that's a fun story. Now, that is actually a scene we get to see in flashback form way down the road in season 8 when we're exploring Chloe's memories and mind. There's like a, you know, I equate many Smallville episodes to movie plots. So there's like a Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind episode of Smallville where we go into Chloe's mind and going through her memories, and we actually see this story take place. Now, it's not Tom Welling and Allison Mack, of course. Although, why not, right? It was like, if it was only a year previous to season 1, they didn't look that much different. But they're younger kids, and I'll just say that I think Chloe and especially Clark went through some serious growth spurts between 8th and 9th grade.
Well, you know, that is right around that time, so maybe that's not unreasonable. But it's an adorable story. And those payoffs, but to me, are the best kind of payoffs. When they're like, at one time the character is like, "Oh, remember when this happened?" Or, "I remember this story." And then like years later, when you've completely forgotten that was even a thing, you actually get to see it happen. I love that. I think that's the best kind of continuity.
It's kind of like Next Generation with Tapestry, right? Where we see
Tapestry,
the story of Picard getting stabbed. That was like season 2. And then like 4 years later, we get to see it. So yeah, I'm right there with you, man. So then Lana has another vision while this is going on, and it's we see her, Chloe's abductor, digging a grave, which is rather ominous, you know?
Yeah.
She says, "Oh, there was a windmill," and once again, the continuity avalanche continues, because mm-hmm. it's the windmill from Nicodemus a few episodes ago where Lana got infected by that flower and climbed into the top of it, and Clark immediately recognizes it. He says, "Oh, it's a windmill in Chandler Field." So he runs out there. Bravo. Bravo for continuity, Smallville. I'm very impressed. Because this show is very, very hit or miss with continuity. Yeah. So I'll take the wins when I can get them. So Clark runs out there to the field. He x-rays around, finds Chloe's coffin. Now, that was a pretty cool special effect of when they pull Chloe's coffin out. It was cool. Documented in detail in the Smallville Official Companion. I won't bother to read it here. But once again, guys, if you like Smallville, go buy the Official Companion, read for yourself. But it was a pretty cool, it was a practical effect. That's why it looks so cool. Because, you know, Clark runs up there, he punches down to the ground and pulls up the coffin. And you're not thinking about it at the time, but when you think back at it, you're like, "Oh, wow, that was pretty cool. That was practical. It wasn't CGI. It looked really realistic." He flies open the coffin and Chloe's in there. And she's like, "Clark, it's always you. It's always you." And they hug, and it's a nice moment.
Nobody questions how he found her or how he ripped the coffin out of the ground, but that's okay. That's neither here nor there.
Those are all valid points, Daniel.
It's just funny. It's, you know, going back, and I don't mean to nitpick because I do like the show. It's just like, you know, he's saving these people left and right. He just shows up at these important locations, and nobody's like, "By the way, how did you know to do that? How did you get there?" Yeah, exactly.
No, I sometimes worry that I sound too negative about the show because I'm nitpicking it, but it's only because I love it so much and I'm so familiar with it, you know?
Oh, there were no shovels around. How did you just come across this submerged coffin? But that's okay.
I mean, she's just so happy to be safe. She's not going to be asking any questions.
Those are questions
that law enforcement would ask later. But then we get this one shot of them embracing. It's the creeper cam. It's a POV shot of some guy in the bushes, and you can't tell if it's the same POV that you'd seen before or what, but the implication is it's the same guy that buried Chloe in the field there and sees them from a distance. So the point is, someone has been watching Clark. Moving on, we're in the hospital again. But I don't count, and I say this every podcast, I don't count multiple hospital visits on my tally board. I think that would be unfair. So it's like one coupon for customer, you know what I mean? So even though we're there again, I'm not gonna count it against the tally board. So Lana and Clark go to visit Chloe in the hospital. She doesn't have much to say, and, you know, she's still pretty shook up by this, and, you know, you would be, right, if you were buried alive.
Yeah, I would be, at least, yeah, for sure.
Like, she's like, I can still, when I close my eyes, I hear the dirt falling on the coffin. Like, that's some Kill Bill stuff right there. That's scary stuff.
Yeah,
I never saw, you know, Ryan Reynolds was in a movie where he was buried alive, right? I think it might have been called Buried, literally.
Yeah,
but
it was supposed to be pretty good,
and I never saw it. It's one of my ever growing, never shrinking to watch list of movies, right?
Yeah.
You know, so Clark and Lana are gonna go, but Chloe's like, "Clark, can you stay for a while?" And Clark's like, "Sure, of course, Chloe." And they kinda hold hands, and we see that Lana like reacts to that and is like, well, I'm going to go. And I did like that, like, hey, Lana, how's it feel to be the third, you know, point of the love triangle now for a change?
Right, you know? Right.
Yeah. But she goes down the hallway and has another really, this is the creepiest vision, I think, of them all, because she sees someone watching her.
Yeah, and we actually get a little bit further in the episode, we get when she's at the Talon and she gets that same reaction.
Yes, yes, yes.
And then you're like, I'm like, wait a minute, you see this, and I know maybe this is debilitating, so this might not make sense, but I'm like, just turn around. Just turn around and see the look in the eyes of the person that's looking at you. Like, I don't know why you don't do that.
But, yeah, because it's like, is this vision, like, take over her own optic nerves?
Yeah, right. I don't know how it works exactly, but yeah. I'm like, do something. Wave your arms about. Make sure that's you. You know, I don't know. Throw something in the air, whatever. But.
Do the thing where you want to see if you're, like, on a camera or not. Exactly. When you're in a crowd, you start dancing around.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Oh, that's great. But that's effectively creepy.
It is. Yeah, it really is.
We go to the next day, and Jonathan and Clark are doing some chores, and this is another subtle use and subtle representation of Clark's powers. Jonathan, he's really struggling to carry, like, one bag of seed and put it in the back of his truck, and Clark just effortlessly picks up three, throws it in the back. I like that. You know, there's a lot of stuff like that during the chores and stuff on Smallville, so credit to John Schneider for making things that are obviously not very heavy look extremely heavy.
All these pillows that he's picking up. Yeah, I agree. I do love that aspect. I love when they do that, and it's just like, oh, of course, this is nothing to Clark. And I appreciate it, and I love it. And then, of course, I nitpick it. But the one thing that, like, I'm like, man, what? Like, if I was Jonathan, I would just stop. Like, you do all this. This is nothing to you. You can get this done in, like, 3 seconds, and this is, like, back-breaking, sweating work to me. Can you just do this for me real quick? Why not? You know, it's just like, of course, we know Jonathan. He is not that person.
Yeah, as we've established, Dan, he's a very stubborn man. So.
He is not that person. But if I were Jonathan, I tell you what, Clark would be doing all my work. For sure. There's no doubt.
They drive off the farm, and we get a POV shot of someone watching them through binoculars. And it's not the same. It's not the same as the visions that Lana is getting. And it's not the same as the one in the field, because it's clearly through some binoculars. So we're left at the time where we just kind of assume it's all the same guy, but it turns out later it's not, which is a good, I'm glad they set that up. That's a good twist in the story I did not see coming when I first saw the episode. So as they're driving, another thing they mentioned in the scene is Jonathan's decided to deposit the check. As soon as we drop off this feed, we're going down to the bank. but unfortunately, on the way, you know, to the bank, they see a Luther Corp team is excavating this empty field. And Jonathan is disturbed by this. He pulls over and goes out and asks Lex. Lex is there, you know, with a bunch of hazmat-suited scientists and very X-Files crew out there. And Lex gives some complete BS explanation of why they're there, right?
He does. It's funny because he's got to know that they – well, I don't know. Does he know that they know better? I don't know if he does or not. But, you know, they're walking around, and he's like, oh, this is just a routine field survey or whatever he says. And there's, like, 70 people there with, like, black trucks and hazmat suits and stuff. And it's like, this is not routine. There's nothing about this random cornfield that is routine. So it does feel like he's stretching a little bit.
Yeah, he has no reason to suspect Clark or the Kents yet. For being connected. I mean, he has his suspicions about Clark, but they don't connect to the alien thing yet. Right. So to his knowledge, that it shouldn't mean anything to Jonathan or Clark. And I mean, his only legitimate excuse is, oh, well, you know, the meteor rocks, we're studying them and blah, 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 whatever, right? So Jonathan gets really upset by this, and he gives Lex the check back because he had it in his pocket because he was going to go deposit. And he's like, sorry, Lex, I can't take your money. And Lex is like, I don't understand. And he says, I wouldn't expect you to, or something like that. And he walks off. I'm like, really, Jonathan? That, like we were talking about, that's totally ornery, completely unnecessary.
Yeah. Yeah. And it gives, and you're giving away your hand. Like, I mean, why bother getting so offended over something nobody would care about, essentially, if you didn't have any reason to? You would think that Lex is a smart guy. Oh, whoa, he got really upset about that. Mm-hmm. Field, you know, why?
What's going on? And then found a piece of a spaceship.
Exactly. Yeah, and then they connect. It's like, way to go, Jonathan. Way to just completely ruin the cover.
Well, this is true to Jonathan's character, though. Like, it's a stupid move, no doubt, but he has a temper. He's hot-headed. He's impulsive. So I totally buy that he would get all worked up about this and give Lex the money back. Because, I mean, he was on the fence to begin with about taking the money. So, but you're right. Way to blow your cover. But here, another continuity avalanche. Who do we have? Dr. Hamilton.
Dr. Hamilton.
Dr. Yeah. Hamilton, played by the great Joe Morton himself, one of my favorite Smallville guest stars. But he finds, as you referred to earlier, Daniel, he finds a crucial piece of Smallville mythology. We don't get to see it yet, but we see like he brings this plastic bag with something in it up to Lex. And he's like, oh, look, you're going to want to see this. And Lex says, handle all the tests personally and report to me yourself. So it's clearly something very important. We can assume that it's a piece of the spaceship, but
it is. It's so funny because like I don't specifically remember this scene or how they handled it, but watching it again, it's like so clumsily handled. Probably because I knew exactly what it was. Like it's so awkwardly like, oh, here's this thing in this plastic bag, and you catch like a corner of it, and you're like, oh, I know what that is.
Well, I know exactly. I expected an insert shot, right, of it because.
That's what I was expecting too. I was like, oh, here it is, and it's this thing. And I was like, oh, they're going to zoom in on this. And they're like, no, they tease it till the end, which is fine. Like, that's a good way to build the tension for sure. But rewatching it, it feels like it loses some of its effectiveness.
Yeah, because we didn't know this episode, the spaceship has gone through a couple of redesigns in Smallville's history. Mm-hmm. Like, the original pilot had a certain version. Well, they did some reshoots on the pilot that had another version, you know. And then finally, the episode Stray, they settled on the sphere with the lawn dart design, is how I refer to it.
Nice.
Design, which I really like. I think it's very sleek, very alien looking. I like that design. But we had no indication there was a missing piece or an octagonal key or anything like that. So just showing us that piece would not have killed the suspense. But I, like you, I understand what they were going for. Like, but it was just, as you said, clumsily handled. So we move on. We have Whitney and Lon at the Talon. And Whitney has been going through his dad's thing since his dad passed away in the last episode. And he's found his dad's war medals, which is something that, you know, was never talked about before. And as Whitney says here, he says, yeah, my dad never talked about it. He was in Vietnam. I didn't know he won all these awards. But it's the purpose of this scene is to kind of put things in perspective for Whitney. He says, man, people, you win a couple football games, people call you a hero. But, you know, my dad was a true hero because he was out there, you know, serving the country. So this plants the seeds for what Whitney's going to do in the next episode and moving forward in the series. So it was a fine scene. And this is something I've said before. Smallville needed more scenes between Whitney and Lana. You know, because he's always the boyfriend obstacle character, and we never really get to see their side of things. You know, like mm-hmm. they are a relationship; they've been together for a while. Let's see some of that. You know,
well, you know, especially after the pilot too, where you set this man up as someone who strings someone up in their underwear in a field. You know, you don't necessarily have the best, warmest, fuzziest feelings for him. So, yeah, these kinds of scenes go a long way in humanizing that character. And kind of making the audience feel for him, for sure.
Mm-hmm. And by the end, you know, I really did come around to liking Whitney as a character.
Yeah, I did too.
He had a very similar arc to, you know, it's the CW boyfriend season one arc, right? We had Tommy Merlin in Arrow season one. And we had Eddie Thawne in The Flash season one.
So. Oh, yes. It's so funny. I didn't even think about that.
It's the same formula, copied and
pasted. Although I actually like those two characters a little bit better.
Absolutely.
Than him. But again, like I said, they don't do anything that's literally reprehensible in the pilot that makes you think that these people are the slimiest, worst people on the planet. But again, yeah, he redeems himself ultimately. And but yeah, these scenes definitely help kind of, hey, by the way, Clark, these two people are in a relationship and are actual people. So maybe you should cool your jets there, bud.
Yeah, exactly, man. This is a bad message for kids to watch. Like, as a high school watching this, I'm like, oh, okay. This girl has a boyfriend? That's cool. Clark's talking to this girl who has a boyfriend, too. No problem. You know, that's bad messages.
Yeah.
So we go back to the Kent farm, and Lex stops by to talk to Clark and just kind of see what's up with his dad turning down the money. I think this is the first time... Well, the episode Leech, Clark loses his powers, and Lex sees that, and he's like, okay, well, I'm not suspicious of him anymore, whatever, right? So he seems to be off that trail. He tells Roger Nixon the Kents are off limits. This kind of reignites his suspicion, because Clark tries to, like, defuse Lex's obsession, because he even says to Lex, like, you know, don't you think it was kind of weird you're out there in that field? Like, I know how obsessed you get with stuff. What's up? And Lex actually tells him that, well, you know, I heard a story from a man that a spaceship came down with a meteor shower. And, of course, Clark knows that, yeah, it did. It's my ship. But he tries to deflect Lex from this. He says, oh, you really believe that? Oh, that's crazy, Lex. And Lex is like, look, I'm just trying to get to the truth, you know, and which is legitimate. Like, I don't think Lex has any nefarious plans here. He legitimately just wants to know what happened the day of the meteor shower because it's such an important day of his life.
And it's one of those times where he's like in the barn with Clark and is waxing philosophical. And, you know, it's a good scene. I like it. I like it in general. And I like kind of the message there. And like you say, this is before Lex he's having any really nefarious kind of reasons behind what he's doing. And it's just like, you know, he kind of knows. I feel like he suspects that nobody's being truthful with him. And that's probably really frustrating for someone like him, you know?
Yeah, he's like, look, I'm doing my best to be a better person and be honest with everybody and you know, all this. And but all you so-called good people are lying to me all the time. So, I mean, I can see it. He does have a line here which I liked and I wrote down. He says, the past is always influencing the present. I like that because Clark is like, can't you just let this stuff go? And I don't, you know, you're obsessed about the car accident. You're obsessed about this. But that's Lex Luthor. Like, if he had a character trait, obsession would definitely be one of them.
Yeah, yeah. But he goes into, I do like his analogy when he says, you know, look at the stars, you know, some of them have been dead for millions of years and they're just now reaching us. The past always influences the present. And I feel like in any good incarnation of Lex, any
like Jesse Eisenberg, right?
anything he does is justified. It could be through his crazy warped reasoning, you know, but he's smart and he sees this connection. He sees these lines that he makes and he's like, oh yes, there are things that influence this. You know, is it a good thing to have this superpowered being here? You know, again, we're not getting into Batman v Superman, but, you know, any good version of Lex is, he's compelling because of his intelligence and the way he thinks. And this is a little tiny taste of that here.
Mm-hmm. Then our next scene is at the Torch. Chloe, Clark, and Whitney, which I think is the only time these three characters have ever been together.
Weird, yeah. It was cool though. I liked it. I liked that little dynamic.
Yeah, they're incorporating Whitney more into the story. Clark had called them both there to talk about his theory on Lana's visions, and it's something called the Crestor syndrome. And you know, I was gonna look this up and see if it was real. I didn't, but I assume that it is, you know, because hey, Clark printed it off the internet, right? So it has to be real. that talking about dating the show and stuff, it's always funny when they have like printouts of things on the internet.
Yeah.
Because you know, hey, it costs what, 99 cents a minute or whatever it was in 2002 to be connected. But it's an article about this DeCrestor syndrome, and it's similar. It's a similar form of PTSD, and it was first diagnosed in the London Blitz. Apparently, it's people who were together during the London Blitz, explosions and stressful situations. They get psychically linked after the bombings, is what the study had been in the London Blitz, according to Smallville again. So do your own research, kids. I should have done so myself, but you know, hey, I only got so much time of the day.
I love the fact that Clark is like, oh, you know, this is what I found. Here it is. I printed it out. And then Chloe takes literally one look at it and goes, oh, I buy it. I'm on board, she says, I think is her line. And it's like, you saw this one printout of this one page that he says he printed from the internet?
I don't think you understand. You know, it's a printout from the internet. I don't know what more authoritative source you can find.
Some investigator you are, yeah, Chloe. Yeah.
Well, she also has the line, which made me facepalm. Clark Kent leaps tall theories in a single bound. Yes. Oh, yep. Mm-hmm. For every great Superman reference they have on the show, they have about three facepalm-inducing ones, I will say. Because why would you say that? Superman is not a pop culture figure, so that is not a phrase you would use. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So the leap whatever in a single whatever is not going to be a colloquialism in the Smallville universe, because there was no Adventures of Superman TV show or whatever. That being said, they try to figure this out, and they say, okay, well, they asked Whitney, who was the first person? That's why he called Whitney there. Who was the first person to be with Lana after the explosion? He's like, well, me, and then the deputies, Watts and Vertigo. And they're like, well, which one got there first? He says, well, I really don't know. And actually, that's true. You don't know. They both get there at the same time, so it's good misdirection. So they decide that they're going to go, you know, drive somewhere. I forgot where, but Whitney says, I'll drive. And then Chloe says, on second thought, I'll drive. And everybody's
like, I do like that.
Oh, okay. And they leave. And this is what I'm talking about. It's the self-awareness of the show. And now I definitely know they were self-aware here because Whitney had been in so many car accidents.
Yep. Yep. Mm-hmm.
And I just love whenever a show is self-aware, I definitely give it some extra slack because they're like, you know what, guys? We know what's going on here. We're not oblivious to it. So yep. That was a funny meta moment for a show that really doesn't get meta very often.
It was good. I really liked it. And then like the shot of them right after all running out of the Torch. It was just cute, and it was like, oh, it's like, hey, Whitney could have been part of the gang the whole time if you had let him. You know,
alternate universe, that's what's going on. So we mentioned these two deputies now, the two cops, Watts and Vertigo. The chief one, which is a Vertigo, he comes by the town late at night to talk to Lana, and they've been really playing up the fact that he's skeptical. He thinks Lana's story is BS, you know. So you, of course, assume this guy is the bad guy. And in a show like Smallville, honestly, they handle some villains so poorly that that would just be the bad guy. Like, yep. So once again, it's almost being meta, where it's like, we know you expect this from us. Here it is. Nope, it's something else. It's not him. It's Watts. And this is the moment you mentioned earlier, Daniel, where Lana gets the vision, and it's of like Watts walking into the Talon, punching out his partner, and they're walking up to her.
And the thing they do too to misdirect you is every time that you see, the other guy, he's like a total dick to everyone. Like, he's a jerk the whole time. You're like, this guy's why is he being so mean everywhere?
Yeah, you think he's intentionally trying to do that to shut them all down.
Yeah. And then it's like, no, he's just a jerk. I don't know.
maybe he's just a jerk. I guess that's it. Better a jerk than an attempted murderer.
And we have to talk about the other one's motivation. Yeah, when we get to that scene.
We're almost there, but oh my gosh. Oh, man. So Clark and everybody show up, and they ask the chief here. It's like, hey, where's your partner? He's like, oh, my partner? Well, he's working his second job at he's a carnival security guard. And then they realize that, you know, the one thing that Chloe had been able to remember was she was somewhere with a lot of stuffed animals hanging around. They're like, oh, okay, well, that's it. That must be this guy's base of operations. Because it's a carnival, right? Of course it's a place for kidnapping and villains to hang out. And, you know, fairgrounds are dangerous places to go, apparently.
And all the lights are still on the,
yes!
on the Ferris wheel and the roller coaster.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because I made a note, too. I'm like, wow, that's a fairly well-illuminated carnival for not being in season, for being closed, you know, for being who knows what time it is at night. Anyway, and they continue to use this carnival for different things in Smallville down the road. And then, you know, I'm pretty sure we've seen it on The Flash as well, honestly.
I'm sure.
Because we've seen a lot of, you know, it's always fun. It's like, oh, man, I remember that from Smallville, that actor, that location, anything like that. So Lana's kidnapped here by Watts, and he starts monologuing about his motivation. And basically, he tells Lana, I never intended to hurt Chloe. I just wanted to solve her kidnapping because it would have made my career.
Oh, man. This is the most eye-rolling part of the episode. Like, he's so mustache-twirling villain in this scene. It's like, I wanted to be the best cop this town has ever seen. And it's like, really? Really?
Well, I mean, people exist like that, right? I mean,
well, yeah, I guess.
I would hope not too many. But
yeah, but it's just like, and then, of course, he's like, so now I have to kill you, even though you didn't have any idea who I was in the first place. You could have just stopped kidnapping people. You know, like, I don't know. It's just his motivation to me was just so over-the-top ridiculous that I, you know, and laughable. And then, of course, what happens to him at the end, and it's just, like, all tied up with a bow, and we don't have to worry about him anymore.
Right. I mean, his motivation is, well, I can still be the hero by solving your murder. It's like, oh, my gosh.
This guy, you could have never showed her your face.
Yes,
and
well,
you would have been fine.
I don't know. Like, I would assume that their connection, that syndrome connection, would have dissipated at some point, because it's only been a few days. So I don't know. Maybe he doesn't know, and he just wants to kill Lana just as well to just in that sever that tie. But yeah, so Clark shows up. He X-rays everywhere. He sees that Watts here has got Lana. He actually doesn't make it in time to stop him from shooting her, but he gets there in time to deflect the bullet, which is cool, into a mirror, which he then goes to cover up. He does like an action hero jump over to Lana and covers her up from the mirror breaking. Watts flees, and Clark follows him, and Watts shoots him like at point blank range like 5 or 6 times, and then you're like, all right, this guy's dead. Now we know he's dead.
Yep, yeah. Yep. He can't live because he knows the secret. Yeah.
Now, there are a lot of, like, teenage Freak of the Weeks that battle Clark that don't die. And sometimes they, you know, they bring a lot of these characters back down the road, which is cool to at least address it. But there are a lot of them that don't. Like, last week's episode that we talked about, Crush, the telekinetic guy played by Adam Brody, Justin, he saw Clark's powers, and he didn't die. And even though he's in a psychiatric ward, you think enough people saying, hey, Clark Kent has superpowers, someone would listen, but...
Well, we do actually have that directly addressed later on down the road, but
yeah, but there still should be a lot more.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you.
But I figured this guy was dead as soon as he saw Clark's secret. Now, I will say, I don't know what kind of special effect they used on like the vest that Tom Welling was obviously wearing, but you could clearly see he was wearing like some kind of like apparatus under his shirt. But Clark throws him like 20 feet as he always does. And then goes back in to help Lana because he sees the cops are coming. And Sheriff Ethan shows up. A sharp-eyed viewer will see Sheriff Ethan is leading the charge here.
Oh, I didn't even see that.
You almost miss him. He's like, Watts, put down the gun. I'm like, oh, that is Sheriff Ethan. And I saw in the credits that Mitchell Kosterman was in the episode. Lana gets a vision again of the guy, and he sees of Watts, and she sees through his eyes that he's having this about to have this gunfight with the cops. And the cops shoot him, and he dies. And I'm thinking, what kind of psychological effect is that going to have on Lana? She just saw someone's death through their own eyes. I was thinking
that same thing. Like, she is going to have PTSD from this. Like, and not only does she see him die, apparently she has the superhuman ability to see the bullet that takes him out. Like, she sees it hit him in the face. And it's like, oh, God, that's awful. Like,
I didn't think about that. Yeah, if you really did get shot in the face, it would just be like, you wouldn't see a bullet, bullet time effect. Yeah.
So it's interesting, but...
no wonder Lana is so screwed up later in life.
Yeah. Maybe I shouldn't blame her, I guess. I don't know.
But during all this, you know, Lana and Clark, you know, leave, and we see them leaving through binoculars, okay? And we realize that, oh, it wasn't Watts that was watching them. It was Roger Nixon who had been investigating. He's been investigating Clark way back since the car accident. Lex told him to drop it, but obviously he knows there's a story there. He wants to keep pursuing it. And this was a great twist, by the way, because you weren't expecting. You had all these point of view shots, and you thought it was the same guy who was the villain of the episode, and it wasn't. It was Roger Nixon. So that's a great twist. I didn't see that coming the first time I saw the episode. But the very first time when Clark saves Chloe in the field, I think that was still the cop. I don't think that was him, because we didn't see it through the binoculars, you know?
Yeah, no, I think you're right. It is unclear, but yeah, I guess you get that kind of effect when she's seeing through his eyes, and that distorted kind of discoloration effect.
Well, I meant more the really far away, like, shot, the creeper shot of Chloe Clark in the field.
Right.
And there was no way he would not have known they were there and stuff. So the mixing and matching of the POV shots is a little confusing, but it does pay off in a good way with the twist at the end.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. That was when at the end when it was like it pulled back and it was him, and I'm like, oh, I see what you did there. That was clever.
So, wrapping up the episode here, Clark and Chloe have a nice scene in the barn, and Chloe got the internship in the Daily Planet. They read her article about her own kidnapping, and they liked it, so they gave her the internship, so that's cool, good for her. Clark finally asked her to the spring formal, and they're just so happy here. It's so nice to see them so happy and smiling, you know. It got me in the feels, you know, being a Clark Chloe fan.
It won't last long.
Yeah,
I know, right? Spoilers.
Enjoy it while it lasts. Yeah. Now this is the shot. I'm always keeping my eye out for these things, right? This shot of Chloe smiling here is the shot they use for her in the opening credits next season.
Oh, cool.
I always keep my eye out for those. And then, hey, the music under this scene, John Mayer, Real World, that takes me back, right?
That is
so high school, right?
It's so funny because, you know, the music is one of the things I think about when I think of Smallville.
Absolutely.
And man, this show is such a, especially early on, with the earlier seasons, is such a time capsule of like poppy, angsty kind of high school-y music. It's so good. It brings me, like you, it just brings me right back there.
I mean, that was our youth, man. I want to run through the halls of my high school. I want to scream the top of my lungs.
I'm right there with you, man.
Oh, man, so good, so good. But then, you know, Smallville, it has basically two endings. It has two endings to every episode. You either have a pop song, which is, you know, this could have easily been the ending scene of this episode had they wanted to, right? You have a pop song with like a teen angst romance moment, or you have a mysterious, you know, scene with Lex where he's up to no good. And
right.
This episode is the latter. We get Dr. Hamilton. Joe Morton comes in to Luther Mansion. He says, Lex, I want to talk to that pilot that saw the ship. I have some questions for him. Lex says, well, he's disappeared. Something has scared him off. Now, this is something that's never followed up on. I'm not really sure if they had an intention to follow this up or not. It seems like something Lionel would kind of do, like intercept this guy and do something with him, but nothing is ever said about it again. And I don't even think it's really necessary to have this guy, you know, quote unquote, fall off the face of the earth, because what else did he really have to say? He told Lex's story. It's just an odd plot point, I thought.
I think it's just to give Lex a little bit more evidence of, hey, this guy's onto something.
Yeah, there's something more than meets the eye here. Yeah, true, yeah. True. But the most important thing here is we get the introduction to the octagonal key, which is like just a linchpin of all things Kryptonian in Smallville for years and years and years to come. Such a cool prop. Now, my friend Lance Laster got me an octagonal key a few years ago for my birthday. I still have it. I have it sitting on my shelf. I'll post a picture of me with it at some point. It's such a cool thing. It just... Because the Christopher Reeve movies had the crystals, and that was a cool thing. But Smallville, it's like this is them putting their own brand on the Krypton, on the Krypton stuff, on the Kryptonian stuff, and it's just such a really cool prop.
It is. I would argue that it's used way too long.
Oh yes.
For way too many things, and
it's a skeleton key. It opens everything.
Yes, they get their use, their budget out of this key for sure, and then some.
Well, and then some. Yeah, they painted gold and then call it the Book of Rao later on in the show to get some really inside baseball for you guys. And they for some reason they cut like the Superman Pentagon in it. But yeah, you're right. They certainly get their money's worth out of this.
Oh man, this key can do anything. This key is literally the key to everything. It's Pandora's box, I guess. It is cool. It's a cool prop and it's a cool concept. Like there's this bit, just this tiny little bit, and obviously it's designed, right? It's so perfectly formed that it must mean something. It must be important.
And it has writing on it as well.
And it has writing on it, yeah. And so like when you're watching this episode and for the next year, two, three, whatever, you know, I can't specifically remember, but you get the sense that yes, it is important. And it actually means something instead of it being like this all-encompassing kind of catch-all for anything we need it to do, but I do like it right here in the beginning. It's super cool.
And then in the transition here to the last shot of the episode, we see Lex look, because Lex has this clear glass desk, so he's looking down at the key.
Yes.
And then we have the slow fade to the spaceship, the Clark spaceship, and the Storm Cellar, and we see exactly where that key should go in the spaceship, and it like pans out like, oh man, this is getting good. We're gonna open up the spaceship. So that was extremely exciting to see. But yeah, so and that's the episode. That's Obscura. And what a great note to end the episode on.
Yes, yes. Definitely the ending is the best part, I think, for sure.
Lex! Where's that crop duster of yours? I wanted to talk to him.
He seems to have disappeared.
Maybe your visit scared him.
Something or someone did. What do you have for me?
The preliminary results of the fragment we recovered.
So what is it?
Well, all I can tell you is what it is not.
I don't like riddles, Doctor.
Then this object will make you profoundly unhappy. To be honest, Lex, there is nothing like this alloy on this earth.
Obscura got an 8.2 out of 10 on IMDb, which is a pretty high rating, all things considered. I say this every episode now. I need to stop talking about it, but I only recently realized this about IMDb. All of their ratings, Dan, are from like 6.5 to 9. You know, like
I was gonna say,
the 10 scale is completely useless. Like you need, there should be a website that like converts that into actual ratings. So it's hard to say, but this is a higher rank. Anything above 8 is usually pretty high regarded. So you know, we got 8.2. And then Neil Bailey from the Superman homepage was also a fan of this episode. He said, "All in all, this was almost a stereotypical episode, save the recurring foreshadowing and themes, which made it almost great, and the fact that the villain is not a teenager gone postal. For this, I give this episode 4 of 5. Now, Dan, what would you give this episode on a grading scale, on a school scale?
You know, I think I would give it a C.
A C? A C? Yeah, a C? Woo! Yeah. Okay, explain.
Yeah, to me, C is average, right? C is right in the middle. And I like the key stuff. I like Lex doing that. And the character stuff is good. The actual A plot, the stuff with, the visions and like Lana has these connections, which never come up again. Or like you said, she witnesses this man's death. Doesn't seem to affect her at all. I don't know. It feels like a stopgap episode between the rest of the season and Tempest, right, which we're coming up on.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're just kind of like, oh, we gotta kind of wrap some things up here. Whitney has a change of heart. I don't know, it's just, yeah, see, it's average, it's fine. It's a pretty typical season one Smallville episode, but so maybe I'll give it a C+ for the stuff at the key.
Well, because they reference Lois Lane. Daniel, come on.
They do reference Lois Lane, but not by name, so I can't give them retroactive credit for that. Although I do think they were obviously alluding to her, but so I'll say C+. I'll be friendly and I'll say C+.
All right, the plus for the key, plus for the key.
Yep.
For me, you know, I agree. This is not the greatest episode of Smallville, but there's a lot of great elements to it, and you know, I feel like that sentence I could use for about 75% of the show. You know, I did like being the Chloe and Clark shipper I am. I did like this episode, although watching it again, I did realize that Clark was more on the fence about it than I would have liked him to be. It's like, come on, Clark. Come on, man. Like, what is wrong with you? Take your line of blinders off. The Freak of the Week plot. True, like Neil Bailey said, it's not a homicidal teenager, but it's almost worse. It's like a psychotic, you know, sociopathic cop.
Police officer, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And the whole very, very tenuous Freak of the Week powers there, like the explosion connected their psychics or something like that. That's odd. But yeah, I mean, overall, I like the Lex stuff. Anything with Lex and Dr. Hamilton and Roger Nixon, that stuff, when he has his own stuff going on, that plays into the mythology, because you know, he's researching Clark, he's researching the spaceship. So all that stuff being said, I'm gonna give this episode a B. That's gonna be higher than you expected, huh?
I get it. I see what you're saying.
Well, Daniel, that makes it C+ for you and a B for me. So moving on from that, we do have some business to attend to before we wrap up. We have the series tally board. Now this episode was actually pretty light on the series tally board. We only had one addition, and that is a hospital visit. So that's going to take us up to 8. So plus one from this week takes us up to 8 hospital visits in 20 episodes. I mean, that's a pretty high ratio, isn't it?
You would think that any other group of students that went to the hospital that many times in 1 year would probably have gone to Hogwarts.
That's true. Good point. And then the only other thing would be the Bechdel test. That is when two female characters share a scene together and do not talk about a male. They talk about something else. And this episode, unfortunately, I think this episode fails, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I don't think anything significant happens between... I mean, really, the only female characters are obviously Chloe and Lana. And I don't think they share any scenes together, do they?
Not alone, no. Yeah. So... Yeah. Yep, so much for that. You know, that's that's not really... The Bechdel test is not like a judge of quality. Sure. I explore it more out of interest. Now, I often joke that, you know, if we did a reverse Bechdel test on Supergirl, it would fail every week. Because there's only
You know, that's actually an interesting point. That would be good to do. Yeah, for a fun experiment.
10 years from now, when I do Always Hold On to Supergirl, maybe I'll do the reverse Bechdel test, whatever that's called. I wonder if there's an official name for that. I'll look it up. But
well, maybe now that Superman is finally going to be a character, maybe, you know, and it's not just texting people. maybe that will change.
Indeed. Well, Daniel, thanks so much for joining me on this episode of Always Hold On to Smallville. I'm glad we found the time to do it. I enjoyed talking to you about Star Trek on Trek FN. I'm glad we could take our conversation over to my territory and talk some Smallville.
Absolutely, anytime. And like I said, once Lois shows up, we should have a conversation.
Oh, for sure, man. Oh, yeah. Hey, I really enjoyed our conversation. You'll definitely be... If you want to be back, you'll be back, my friend.
Oh, so, I'll be back. It'll be fun.
Awesome. Well, if people want to find you on the internet, Daniel, where can they find you?
As has been mentioned once or twice on this show, you can find me every week on Trek FM, our network of all Star Trek-related shows. So if you're interested, check it out. I'm on the show covering the Star Trek The Next Generation show with my two co-hosts. We have great fun. It's called Earl Grey. Check it out if you're into that kind of thing. And if you want to just tweet at me about Smallville, believe me, I'll respond and we'll have a good conversation. You can find me at Twitter, at OneUpDan. That's the number one, not the word.
All right, and as for me personally, you can find me at MoronZach, that's MoreOnZach, on Twitter. And as for the podcast, you can find us at Always Smallville. And as for the podcast, you can find us at Always Smallville on Twitter. That's Always Smallville with a 1S. Yeah, I know, right? 1S. Did you hear the double S in my...
I heard it. I heard the difference, yeah.
I was going to edit that out, but now I'll leave it in. Yeah. So yes, it's Always Smallville, like with two words, Daniel. It's too long for Twitter, so that's why I made it Always Smallville. And it actually looks better too. It looks more, you know, a little more sleek that way. We're that way across social media. So Always Smallville on Twitter, Always Smallville on Facebook is our hashtag or whatever on Facebook. If you type in Always Smallville, you'll go to our Facebook page, and then our email is alwaysmallville@gmail.com. And also, if you're listening to us on iTunes, please leave us a review. We've gotten some great reviews lately. We've been reading them in the last couple episodes. I really appreciate it, guys. Thank you so much. Just knowing that people are out there listening and like commenting and having things to say. I mean, really, like, I would do it anyway, but it just encourages me to do it more. So,
yep.
It's a great feeling. So, anyway, that's going to do it for this week on Always Hold On to Smallville. Next week is the season finale, Tempest. We're already at the end of the first season. I know that people have been asking me, like, hey, are you going to keep going? What's the deal? You know, I am going to take a break. I don't know how long. I want to take a break, one for myself, you know, because I'm a busy guy. I love Smallville, but, you know, I got other things that I do in my life. And then also, you know, just so I can get a head start on episodes. So, you know, I know every now and then I'm a little late on an episode, so I thank you guys for bearing with me. But that way I can kind of get ahead of the game, get some in the can so we can knock those out every Tuesday for you guys in the future. All right, well, we'll see you next week talking about Tempest. And until then, always hold on to Smallville. School. I wanna scream at the top of my lungs. I just found out there's no such thing as the real world.
time.